Blog Talk Radio.
Trump care back from the dead. Apply the paddles. DOA, but signs of life. And Nigel Farage has said it. It made him stronger, just like Nietzsche. That's the Donald and his loss on Obamacare. And from an AP story yesterday, President Donald Trump says he expects to make a deal on health care, even though his first attempt failed just a few days ago. Trump is hosting a reception for senators and their spouses at the White House, and it's attracting both Republicans and Democrats. He says the bipartisan crowd is, quote, a very good thing, and predicts a deal on health care that will happen, quote, very quickly. He says, quote, I know we're all going to make a deal on health care, and that's such an easy one. Trump also sees potential for working with Dems on other issues like infrastructure. He says, hopefully it'll start being bipartisan because everybody really wants the same thing. We want greatness for this country that we love. Hey, you know, that sounds pretty good, huh? And there were articles out there. You know, you can't really predict what this guy's going to do or how successful he's going to be because he doesn't run by the typical standards, love him or hate him. And, you know, love him or hate him, he's got a different way of doing things. And I think people have written him off so many times. And it has, of course, it's really bothered people that these talking heads, these media mavens, the nabobs, you know, these authorities, these great wise kind of self-appointed gurus will get up and say he's done, he's finished, it's over, hit the showers, leave the stadium, you bum, and then he just comes up back out of nowhere. So it's kind of interesting to watch Trump in action. I think he's a good role model for people that people feel like that they can't make a mistake or yeah, everybody's against you, or, you know, there's a thousand lessons you can learn from this guy. Now, how it's going to happen and what's going to be like, I'm not sure, but I think that Paul Ryan burned up a lot of political capital. And, you know, I kind of wondered, although I don't know, you know, you never know what's in the minds of these people. There's so much failure in politics. It makes you really wonder why someone would make a bunch of promises and then go into office and not try to keep them, right? And we see that all the time. And it's weird because, you know, if you're the kind of person who wants to be regarded highly after you leave, which, you know, most of these politicos are, then why would you go out of your way to promise stuff that you don't plan on keeping your word? It's like a virus. It's like going to DC is like a virus where, you know, people pick up this kind of style. So anyway, it's a new day, but it really makes you wonder about all of the politicians who did these dumb things that ended up burning them. And one example is George Bush's dad, George Bush Sr., who was obviously, you know, a very highly regarded person who didn't win his rematch. He didn't win his, you know, his second attempt at the presidency. And he had said, read my lips, no new taxes. If you did that, why wouldn't you move heaven and earth not to have more taxes? So it just kind of makes me wonder, did Paul Ryan, here's a question for you. Did Paul Ryan purposefully try to screw the president and the U.S. over by bringing in a very, very, or maybe not very, very, but a fairly leftist redo of Obamacare? That's one thing I'd like to know. Apparently, he's got a very high opinion of himself, although he's only passed three bills in his life, but every year. You remember when Obama wasn't putting a budget together? And the Democrats were acting like that's just, you know, the way it's been for a million years. So Paul Ryan would put out his own budget, which was kind of impressive. You know, that's a lot of work. And then he'd bring it to the House and nothing would happen to it. But he's supposed to be this wonk. and he is apparently not. He's lacking a couple of things. Number one, the ability to persuade. Number two, where's all the policy that he's made in the past? But they claim is that Paul Ryan, when he did this omnibus spending plan, spending bill a couple of years ago, didn't check with his own party first to see what they wanted. And then I saw some of the stuff that was in there, and there was a lot of, you know, there's just this sense that Obama came in and he brought a bunch of stuff that the people, the GOP and the conservatives didn't like. And then when they had a chance to push back, there was always some sort of a spectacular failure. And Paul Ryan was a part of that. And it made the GOP seem very weak. Now, there's something else I want to bring up to you right now. Somebody has written an article that says, why didn't they have all these bills? Why didn't the GOP have all these bills lined up like planes waiting to take off at an airport? And I was thinking about that, and I think that's a perfectly legitimate question to ask. I mean, if you're dying, you're chomping at the bit to get into power, and all you do is complain about the leadership that you had, it would seem like these guys, what were they doing? You know, what were they doing over the years in retreat, in the years in that they're waiting to get back into power? I mean, it just, I don't know. I think part of it is because they were so surprised that Trump won, but they couldn't have been surprised that the GOP got the House back now, because there had been 8 years of, you know, fairly miserable results from Obama, which would give the folks on the right an opportunity. So I really don't get it. I don't understand a lot of the stuff that's going on. Now, if the GOP can't be unified, I understand that, because I don't know. I mean, they don't like Trump. How many of these people in the GOP would sabotage Trump, would destroy their own party's chances for the next 4 years, 8 years, who knows how many years, just to get rid of Trump? And there are people out there that are working on that right now, the John McCains, the Lindsey Grahams. So it ultimately makes you wonder, what are these people working for? You know, so anyway, just my thoughts. But going back to the health care bill, what's it going to look like now that Paul Ryan may not be the central person in there? Is it going to be more conservative? And the answer, I think, to that is that it's going to have to be more conservative, because if it's not more conservative than what they just tried to pass, then it's not going to pass this time. Right. So it's got to be more conservative. But how conservative is it going to be? And what are the changes going to be and everything? So I am just wondering. And I see here that Cooper, what's his face? Anderson Cooper is bringing up the Russia ties again. These guys didn't, when Trump came in, they were so shocked, they were so surprised, they couldn't really get wrap their minds around it. And so they had to come up with something. And Russia is apparently better than nothing, because if they drop Russia and go to something else, then they're exposed as just being obstructionists. If they hang on to Russia, I guess the idea is there must be some, you know, there's fire, there's smoke, there must be fire. So, but I do like the part where Trump has kind of exposed the fakeness, the falseness. And you've got all of these essays and articles and stories out there, statements that are just the same thing. Of Trump, you can't make it, you suck, you stink, sit down, you're a sexist, you're a racist, you're an out-of-touch billionaire, you're angry, you're mean, you know, all this stuff, you can't make it. And while Trump is standing there shoveling the dirt out of their grave. And so there were a number of stories that came out, one from Krauthammer, one from Robert Reich, that little dwarf that was the Commerce Secretary. Robert Reich dismantles Trump's health care pledge. I don't think he has any credibility left. Well, according to these guys, he never had any credibility. So he's back where he started. All right, here's a little bit on why. Well, let's take a break, and I'll come back and play you a little clip on why healthcare may not be dead. Hey, I've got something great for today on, if you're of a certain age, Captain Kangaroo, howdy doody. I've got some inside. I just stumbled across some inside baseball on these shows that you might find entertaining. 617 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. To call in at 805-6180. I have my text buddy right in my pocket, and delighted that you got up to listen, whether by accident or choice. We'll be right back. It is the 29th of the third month, and here's a little Ramblin' Man. All right, so here is a little bit on the resuscitation of, here's a little Reich for you to warm your jets up.
Nobody knew how difficult healthcare was.
I don't think Donald Trump has any credibility left on this issue of health care. I mean, he has said he only had plan A. There was no plan B. And then all of a sudden, just a couple of days later, he has plan B. And he presumably has plan C and D and F and G. And every time he takes a stand, it looks like there is really no stand there. You know, a lot of Republicans called his bluff over this health care. And he, it turns out, there was no ability. He had no ability to stand his ground. So I don't know what he's talking about, unless he is talking about maybe a back channel with what, the Democrats, maybe Donald Trump. I mean, the chance that Donald Trump is actually going to be making a deal with Democrats and have enough votes with a few Republicans to come up with some changes that are strengthening the Affordable Care Act. Well, I'll eat my hat, but it would be great if he did that.
All right. Well, thank you. Let's, start sending this guy some hats. Here's a little bit on the healthcare battle. Now, I never heard Trump claim any expertise in Obamacare, just that it was a broken system and it needed to be fixed. So if they try to put something across and they do it in a few days and it fails and they go again, how's his credibility destroyed? This must be a DC thing, you know? Anyway, here we go. Fox News.
So I would say to the Speaker, to Leader McConnell, and to the President, drop repeal, drop it today, and drop it for good.
We're going to keep talking to each other until we get it right. I'm not going to put a timeline on it because this is too important.
Our Democratic friends now have the law that they wrote in place, and we'll see how that works out.
And if we can find a way forward, we'll do it. I'm not saying we've picked a strategy, we're going to go with this group or that group. Several people reached out and expressed an interest. And the president's view is that he's willing to listen to them and hear what their ideas are.
Healthcare battle may not be over. Let's talk about it with our panel. Charles Hertz, opinion editor for the Washington Times. Anna Palmer, senior Washington correspondent for Politico. Tom Rogan, columnist for National Review and Opportunity Lives. And syndicated columnist Charles Krauthammer. All right, Charles. They're still talking. We were waiting this morning for the GOP leadership presser. They were like 45, 50 minutes late, which is unlike them. But apparently within the GOP conference, they were having some heated discussions. The speaker comes out and says, we may be moving again on healthcare.
Look, I don't think there's a reason why it had to be pronounced dead. The president had an ultimatum. He decided he would stick to it. He decided that as a result, he would not be involved. That's fine. But it's still, I think, an open question whether the Republicans in the House and in the Senate can negotiate among themselves. They were not that far apart. And then, you know, I've been advocating this other alternative where you abandon the restrictions that are imposed by the reconciliation process, meaning you stuff the bill with all the kinds of stuff you were going to add later, stuff that would appeal to the Freedom Caucus. And you put that in the bill and you toss it over to Senate. And if Senate Democrats want to filibuster, fine. So I think there are several options. I don't think they are that far apart. I think it's perfectly reasonable that they could negotiate a deal among themselves. And I do think that in the fall, when Obamacare's problems are going to really come to the surface again, spiking premiums and deductibles, and it gets worse every year, there'll be less nostalgia for Obamacare than you have found in the current debate.
Well, and Tom, that's what we got from the president. One of his most recent tweets said, you know, listen, it's going to happen. Democrats are going to have to come and work with us because it's going to fall apart. Maybe that for some people has been the strategy all along.
I think the president has a point there, because as Charles says, those premiums are going to go up, and every sort of objective analysis shows that trend line. And the issue becomes, in a political sense, when those trends go up again in a tangible way for voters, it'll be a sort of political rising phoenix for Trump to give him a second chance at this, because again, at the people at the electoral level who are going to be calling into those congressional offices might shift quite a lot when those, you know, that up curve just shows that it's head again.
Now, I want to, we have a lot to talk about with healthcare, but I want to switch over to another topic.
All right. So that's it. It's not over. I personally thought it was going to be over. I think there's such a different way that this president approaches things, and it's a can-do attitude. And you know, I'm really kind of mystified at the number of people who really were thrilled to write this guy off, which I found to be, you know, I don't know, weird. The kind of auguring in this failure, this love, this you know, so it kind of strikes me that, you know, when George H. Bush or George W. Bush, pardon me, Jr. got in, there was a lot of expectations for the conservative movement, and I think that a lot of these people don't know what really, either don't believe in it, because at some level politics is an expression of your religion, or it takes the place of your religion. But people don't understand. I don't think George Jr., George W. Bush, I don't think that he understood what the conservative movement really was. I think he understood part of it. He understood the idea that if you reduce taxes at a certain rate, the income increases. Now there's I think it's called the Laffer curve. But in any event, I think that George W. Bush failed because he didn't really have a conservative vision. And I think there was this catastrophe that happened, this disaster that happened on his watch, and everything else was, you know, responding, kind of scrambling around to respond to that. And then when Obama came in, there were all of these incredible promises, and this brand new person didn't, you know, and outrageous lies were told about him and by him. And it brought in a level of cynicism and failure that is probably almost unprecedented. And so people got used to being lied to, and they got used to the cynicism and people getting up and making statements, promises or statements about facts, and kind of winking and chuckling at the same time. And that was associated with Obama, and there was a self-righteousness. There's this idea that the left, socialism, is brings in a level of competence and a level of humanitarianism, skill. They're bringing, they're kind of giving birth. I think the reason that people were so furious with Trump is they felt like that America was in the midst of giving birth to this new way of living, this new style, this kind of, you know, this socialist kingdom was, we were in the midst of it. And then when Trump shows up, he pulls the plug on it and they're so angry at him. And I don't think that, obviously the response to him is emotional. It is, it's, you know, visceral, emotional. It's across the board for the left. And they're hanging on to this idea that Trump is a bad man, therefore he does bad things, therefore he must be stopped. It is so simplistic, you know. Take a break here. 523-1450 to call in and 805-618-0 to text. And some more things on the radar. We got some pretty heavy things going on with weather. There was a real outbreak of tornadoes last night in Texas, and it was covering part of the area of eastern New Mexico, and now it's kind of moving south. But let's get into a little bit more healthcare, because I know people are wondering what direction things are headed. We'll get right back to that. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450. 6:30 on the button. Okay, so just reading that story about this, the latest development in the Tai Chan case, wow, what a disaster. And it kind of makes you wonder, will this guy ever be convicted? But that's certainly is not good news for the DA's office. Now, I'm looking for a little bit of news here for the your weather, which, like I say, there was a number of, it was kind of interesting, but there was a number of tornadoes that had been reported last night. I tried to get a little bit, it was kind of bedtime, so, but I've got some from the Weather Channel, which always has a hard time coming up here, but anyway, let me get to some headlines for you. Brexit, no turning back. The die is cast. There's apparently Britain couldn't get back in if they wanted to, which is good news as far as I'm concerned. That was always an attempt to make Europe like America economically, and the cost was too high. Soros University may shut down in Hungarian crackdown, and countries in Europe are starting to defend themselves against that maniac. A paralyzed man moving again with thought control. Scientists developing first ever blood brewery to combat ailments. Storm chasers killed in crash while pursuing tornado. Cars collide in middle of live stream. It'll be interesting to watch. All right, so here's we got a phone call here, but I got a little response from Frankie. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connor Shows This.
This is Pat, and I just wanted to call and tell you I agree with you. I don't think Washington has ever seen anything like the Donald, and he doesn't give up. And I'm hoping that he, through all this tirade that Democrats are putting on him.
It's probably better to call it a tiroid. So,
yeah. So, it's too early. That's what it is.
No, that's fine. But I agree, and I think that, I don't know, I don't think people really recognize leadership anymore. A leader isn't perfect, I guess, unless the person, the leader is Jesus. But, you know, the leader is not necessarily perfect and has shortcomings. But one of the things that I've noticed about Trump, and I'm sure you have too, he's kind of a relentless motion machine. He's always working on ideas. They say he's up like 20 hours a day, 18 hours a day, working on stuff, and he doesn't quit.
No. He does it, and I think maybe Jesus has a little hand in it, too. So we'll just hope that that's true and that this country will get through it with the Donald.
Yeah, absolutely. Positives and negatives. Anything else, Pat?
That's it for now.
Good call. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay,
thank
bye-bye.
You
bet. Bye-bye. All right, so I have heard this story that Trump had some sort of a conversion experience, and it would make sense to me. I mean, we're always looking for theories that make sense of things, right? So that would kind of explain to me a little bit why he would suddenly be more enthusiastic about, you know, shutting down abortion or a lot of different things. And I was kind of thinking about this on the way over there. I think the evangelical movement made a mistake in presenting its beliefs, which you could boil down to, I guess, the four spiritual laws. They made a mistake. Because they reduced everything down to this tiny, you know, these tiny statements. And in the history of Europe, which became the history of the world through all of the developments in science, the creation of science. Science was developed in Europe in the 17th century, approximately modern science. And the developments of capitalism. Capitalism was also, as we understand it, was developed in Europe. Law, rule of law, was developed my clip for the tornadoes just came up, but law as we understand it, not just law as a statement from the king or the legislature, but law as a theory of a law above the law, natural law. It was funny. I ran into Bev Courtney, and Bev Courtney and I had, she was the head of the Tea Party, had this kind of discussion on the air about the natural law, and she said it was God's law, and I said, well, it's actually a lot bigger than that, which kind of sounds, if you're a Christian, it sounds absurd. How can the natural law be bigger than God's law? You know, but I think you have to understand how the natural law developed. But I had in my hand, I had a book on natural law with me when I ran into her over at Tiffany's restaurant, which, if you're into Greek food, is off of Telshore, across from Dillard's. But the thing is that the natural law develops first really with the Greeks, and the Christians also have their theories, and they come together, and the philosophers, the Western philosophers, the Greek philosophers, the Christian and I guess Jewish Christian church and the Jewish temple, and then the philosophers all have their input on it. And certainly the most powerful theory of law that's ever been created, because it promises or claims that there is a law above the law. Now, I've tried to explain this before. It is certainly not contradictory to say the law, the natural law, is coextensive with God's law. You can say that. But to understand it in application, you really have to have an understanding, a little bit of the history of it. Because writers like Cicero and the Stoics and Aristotle and Plato, you cannot put these people or these groups aside. You do great harm to the natural law, and you don't gain anything from that. Because one of the claims of natural law is that it is a product of reason and observation. And the theory of law that we use now is called positive law. Now, in the old way it was organized, there was the natural law, and then there was the application of the natural law in England, which became the common law. And then the positive law was supposed to come out, be some application of the idea of law. And I'll just give you one example as to, because some of these concepts are kind of hard to follow or understand. It would be illegal at all times and in all places to murder somebody, right? But the speed limit is illegal to the extent that it's posted. So the speed limit might be 20. It might be 40. There's towns where there's speed traps. We've all driven through them and got, some of us have gotten tickets. The speed, the idea of safety, you can claim as part of the natural law, but you can't claim that necessarily a speed in a law is part of it. It's not really the natural law. It's an application of the right to make a law that creates safety or order. And you don't want to say that is opposed to the natural law, but it's not on the same order of things. So what we've done in this society, and I was getting back to my criticism of evangelicalism, is even though evangelical is kind of an intellectual movement, it really failed to tell the history of the West. And in doing that, it lost this giant opportunity to advocate for the idea that Christianity is a, or the Bible, Judaism, Christianity, Catholicism, all these things together made a matrix in which the natural world naturally evolved out of, because it's happening all over Europe. People are working on ideas that are first test driven in the church. And then later, as the church loses power, it is philosophers, some which are tied to the church and others aren't, that develop the doctrines that we're using today. But we've lost touch with the history of the West. And in doing that, so we've lost touch with who we are. So when a topic like the, my go-to topic, the gay marriage, comes up, there's not an argument in the society against it other than it's wrong. you don't want it because it's wrong. And then the other group says, well, it's right. You know, what's more important than love? These people just want to love each other. If you went back to the natural law, like somebody like Gorsuch, I think would, given the opportunity, as you'd say, marriage is something that could, not in all instances will, or not in all instances that would actually have the possibility, but potentially any marriage could produce a child. So a marriage between two elderly people is not a non-marriage because they can't have a kid, because if you roll that marriage back in time, you could, or if you cured one of the sterility of one of the people, whatever, it would be the possibility to create a human life out of a marriage. And the definition that we have now for marriage is just sentimental. It is just of the sentiment. It is just of emotion and passion. And that's why we've bought into the idea that a marriage is over when one of the parties has lost passion for the other or commitment. We say, well, it's over. And so, but that one issue has radically changed our lives. And because we're in the middle of it, it's like a fish trying to do a commentary on water, what water is like. You know, we're in the middle of all this stuff happening. We can't really understand it, but it's been devastating. And that's just one of the changes, that if you had a natural law application, understanding of the law, people would look at this stuff totally differently. 646 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450, and 805-6180. I've got some thunderstorms a little bit to the east of here, and then we got some local weather.
Way at this point, and we're almost kind of feeling like we're in the heart of it. I mean, it's been day after day of severe weather. This can definitely happen this time of year to end out March. We had, you know, several tornadoes reported yesterday. We've had a lot of hail, a lot of wind damage over the last couple of days, and it's going to be more and more of that, not only over just the next couple of days, but also through the weekend. So I want to talk about the weekend storm specifically.
Hey, it's Kelly.
And it basically has to do with this wave of upper level
Kelly,
energy coming in.
Hey,
anytime
you
see this kind
on.
Of thing,
right,
like
just,
a bowling ball of energy there in the upper levels.
Give me a second.
Especially this time of year, you get some moisture in the picture and you're going to have another round of severe weather. So Saturday, we're going to watch out in the southern plains. Once again, these are some of the same areas that have had severe weather over the last several days. Dallas, you guys need to be careful on Saturday. Right now, we're going with torcons of 2 to 3. Don't be surprised if those go up. By Sunday, we're going to be watching more toward the Gulf Coast. But overall, just kind of a stormy, severe weather type of weekend.
What's up, Bob?
Good morning, Kelly. Thank you for asking. Kelly, we talk a lot about politics. I was wondering if we could talk about medical this morning.
Are you having a medical emergency?
Not today. How about you?
No, but thank you for asking. All right, let me put you on hold, and we'll be back after just a couple of, well, maybe 1 minute, okay?
You're an honor, sir.
All right, so we've got a phone call from Bob, and Bob is informing me that we're talking too much about politics, and we need to shift gears on medicine. Go ahead, Bob.
Yes, sir, Kelly. The reason I'm calling you is because, well, first of all, let me say that I did say hello to our friend, Mr. Ben Rawson, and that was interesting. And what happened most recently is that I had to see a doctor, and then after I saw him, I was told that he nuked me. What does that mean?
He nuked you?
Yes, sir. From what I know, Kelly, is that if that happens to somebody, they're advised to ask for a second opinion. And anytime anybody asks their primary care for a second opinion, then things start to happen, and it's generally not good for the doctor who nuked you. I don't want to say his name because he's a good man.
If he's a good man, why did he nuke you?
Yeah, he wants to raise the national. He wants to contribute to the national debt. Is all that I can.
You're using, Bob, the phrase nuke, which normally would be involving radioactive material. What are you talking about?
What I'm referring to is that when a doctor, it's a Hippocratic oath. They're there to not harm.
Bob,
well, our medical association
today,
they harm you.
Bob, It's Hippocratic oath, not hypocritical oath, but go on.
Oh, I'm glad I'm talking to you, Kelly. Okay. The doctor, let's see, it's a lot of doctors. My understanding is that here in the Las Cruces area, we have the C doctors. If you want to get an A doctor, then you go to
Bob.
MD Anderson.
Bob.
In Arizona.
Can't take this anymore. Bob, can you hear me, please? Don't talk without breathing and listen to see. It's a conversation. Listen to hear if I'm trying to say something back. Don't talk for 5 minutes without taking a breath or listening. Now, you haven't answered what Nuke is. Did he say, I don't want to see you anymore?
No, not yet.
Is that coming? I'm trying to follow this. How did he nuke you?
First of all, let me start this way. I have a bad back, okay? I got it working at a Safeway warehouse out in California. And I've been having doctors give me relief.
Bob,
from
I'm running
pain.
Bob, I'm running out of time. I can't take this right now. I'll call back on this. Sorry, kind of collect your thoughts, all right? Thank you. All right. So I just noticed the time is getting away from us. Now, thanks for the call, Bob, though I do appreciate it. Where was I before we got nuked? All right, so you've got this. Well, let me see. Just have to see how many add. All right, so I've got a little bit of. Let's do some ads. We'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 523-1450, 805-6180. All right, so I'm kind of picking through some of this news here. Senator McCain says scandalous revelations about Trump team won't end soon. I really wonder, what are these? It's the same question that I would have for Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid. You're working on a set of ideas and principles that, if they are fully applied, are going to destroy America. Where are you going with this? Now, Nancy Pelosi is now having to deal with this stuff. You know, it blows up in her face. It blows up in Reid's not in there anymore, but Schumer's face. And they say, okay, well, you couldn't pass the thing for, oh, you know, you couldn't update the healthcare law, therefore let it go. It's a great victory for Obamacare. Obamacare is this terrible, it's this terrible program that was meant to be bankrupted into single payer, which is government healthcare. That was the plan behind it. Obviously, they lied their rear ends off about it. Now, McCain and other Republicans are going after Trump 24/7. So, and here's my problem with people like McCain and who's the guy that ran for president last time? The guy that tried to jump up and say I'm still available, Mitt Romney. Is these people hold themselves up as having personal rectitude that is far beyond anything really that the president or even the party could have to offer. And I find this bizarre. We've got the president in there. He's trying to work on a lot of programs to, in theory, make things better, give us a stronger economy, stronger border, all these different things. Whether you buy into them or not, you're in the party. Are you really going to take down the president to help the country? If you took down, let's just say somebody like McCain, who was part of this group of people that brought out this document that claimed that Trump was doing these bizarre things in Europe that I won't even mention them. They're scatological in nature, but What does John McCain think is going to happen to the country if Trump gets pulled out of the presidency? Are they going to call on John McCain to be the president or Mitt Romney? Is it going to help the country has gone through this terrible time, this lost and I would say, you know, some people would argue even treasonous time of Obama. Now we're kind of working through that and trying to put the pieces back together. And you have people like McCain who's apparently going to make his entire, and the two most bitter people, obviously McCain and Romney, both look at Trump and say, I could have won this race. If this guy could win, I could win. And they're going to try to destroy everything. And there's a bunch of conservatives and Republicans out there that are on this bus. But you see, they're not even ready to lead right now because they don't even have bills made up. They'll attack the president day and night and work against him. But these people haven't even put bills together. It's just crazy. 659 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces. 523-1450 and 805-618. We'll be back after break on the hour. So I told you that Frank, while he's laying at home, he's got some Jameson's in his baby bottle. He's laying on his bed watching MSNBC, CNN, anti-Trump networks. And so he keeps sending me email, abusive emails. Now, I don't know why Frankie, maybe he lost his, well, he couldn't have lost his phone service because he's texting me, but why is, he says to me, let's see here. Let's see. Well, I'll run into this. Oh, here we go. Bob is a flaming con kook. And I texted him back. He's your biological twin. So typically con kook, weak, comeback. Trumper is a commie pinko. You cons are mentally deficient. Michelle O is classy. Melanoma is low class ho. 59% of America believes Trumper collusion with Russians. As far as I know, absolutely no evidence that Trump colluded with Russia. I don't know where you're getting your numbers from, by the way. I would hate to I'd hate to speculate there, Frankie. Well, Frankie, why did you stop calling in? Was the pain of losing to Trump so great that you just, you know, you can't even make a phone call anymore? I mean, what's going on? All right, dedicated to Frankie and others like him, Sweden warned not to return to the high tax 70s. And this is from Bloomberg. Don't return Sweden to the high taxes of the 1970s and 1980s. That's the warning from Sweden's state-funded economic think tank. A social democrat-led government has been raising taxes on workers while planning to cut levies on pensioners and those collecting benefits. So these are the same people that are bringing in all of these Muslims that are raping all these women in this country is also saying we're going to raise taxes. We got a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show.
Yes, sir. Kelly, this is Bob. I just have a fast comment.
Bob, please. Go ahead.
Frankie is not being attended by visiting angels. That means he is a poor man in more ways than one. You let him know for me, will you?
I will. I will do that. Thank you. The angels in the white coats will be coming for Frankie shortly. But anyway, so Frankie says, you know, capitalism stinks. Socialism is the way forward. I did a little segment on it yesterday. And so from Sweden itself, we found out yesterday, if you weren't listening in, that the idea that Sweden or that part of the world is a socialist paradise is absolutely false. Sweden had built itself into the fourth strongest economy in the world. And then, of course, who shows up? The parasite socialists, and they throw all of this social welfare and taxes onto the country, and then it pretty much grinds everything down to a halt. So then they were trying to figure out why life was suffering there. It was very high up on the charts in terms of happiness. Now it's down to number 14. But the state economists are saying there are big negative. This is a quote. Urban Hansen Brusewitz, director general of the National Institute of Economic Research, said in an interview Tuesday in Stockholm, there are big negative effects, at least in the long term, of higher state income tax and marginal tax rates. Should things head in this direction too long, it would be harmful for Sweden. Now, Frankie, that's Sweden itself talking to you, telling you you don't know what you're talking about. So Swedish unemployment spiked in around 2010 at 10%, and then when they started to go after the high tax rates, unemployment went down below 7%, and it's still dropping. So anyway, can't tax and spend your way to paradise, utopia, whatever you want to call it. All right, so here is don't even know if I want to get into this, but here's Anderson Cooper on the Russia ties, which is the only thing that the Democrats have to fight back against Trump, which is pretty sad. And one of the things that's been noted repeatedly is the lack of leadership at the top level for the Democrats, and the fact that all of the people that are identified as leaders in the Democratic Party are aged. They're between 70 and 80, which is not a good sign. Check this one out.
The facts about this White House and those close to it and ties to Russia. All we want to show you a flow chart just so everybody can follow along because it's confusing. There are the facts about former White House National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, a key advisor during the Trump campaign. In 2015, he sat next to Russian President Vladimir Putin at a black tie gala for Russia's RT propaganda network, which the Kremlin paid Flynn more than $33,000 to attend. There's the fact that during the campaign, Flynn had regular contact with Russian nationals, and during the transition, he discussed sanctions with Russia's ambassador, Sergei Kislyak, and then lied about it to the vice president and others, and the fact that it cost him his new job as national security advisor. That's a fact. Then there are the facts about President Trump's son-in-law and close advisor, Jared Kushner. Fact, in December, during the transition, Mr. Kushner met with the ambassador. He also met with a guy named Sergei Gorkov, president of Russia's state-owned bank, VEB, in late 2016. Some facts about former Trump campaign manager, Paul Manafort. He worked for years in Ukraine for pro-Russian politician Viktor Yanukovych. Manafort also partnered with a Russian oligarch on business deals. And according to the Associated Press, he worked for Russian oligarch Oleg Deripaska to benefit the Putin government. Fact, former Trump foreign policy advisor of some sort, Carter Page.
Is this boring to you? I can't even follow this stuff. I'm just going to make a guess here. The stuff with Russia might linger around as long as Trump is in office, because they don't really seem to have anything else. I don't think this thing with Trump and Russia is going to go anywhere. So, I mean, I don't know. I think the more that Trump is successful, the less they're going to be able to talk about this, because there's so many other things going on. There is no evidence that I've heard of any collusion between the Trump party. And although I don't know what's going on with the leaks claim, but anyway, it's just, I mean, I think a lot of this stuff has just got to die because it doesn't really go anywhere, you know? And I don't even know about the leaks. I'm sure that from what I understand, from what Devin Nunes said, the head of the Intel committee, that the Obama administration got a hold of information about Trump people and possibly, you know, I think that story is probably going to die too, just because I think people are going to get bored with it, but I think they're really bored of the Russian thing. There's no evidence whatsoever. The fact that you have to lay out a flow chart as opposed to any real evidence that there was a collusion makes me wonder why these media companies are going after this stuff. But here's Tucker Carlson. Democrats still don't understand why Trump won, so they made up elaborate Russia story. That is my go-to move. I just saw this clip right now. Because I think nothing else really explains what's going on.
Well, it seems like you need a PhD at minimum to understand the countless different strands of the Trump-Russia controversy / conspiracy theory. You have alleged Russian hacking, allegations of collaboration between the president and Putin, intelligence agencies spying on American citizens, and now, of course, a ton of congressional bungling.
All right, so let me take a little break here. Looks like I've got a little computer trouble. We'll be right back. 523-1450 and 805-6180 to text. We'll be right back. right. So here is five takeaways, which I'm not even sure I understand, but Health Affairs blog, five lessons from the Affordable Health Care Act's demise. Number one, nothing is inevitable. And so Obamacare is not inevitable because it has to die because it's so bad. Number two, stakeholders matter. In other words, the people who are paying for stuff matter, and those are the people that are not cooperating with Obamacare. And you've got people, the only people that really want to be involved in something like this, it is a classic situation of risk and reward. It's capitalism. Capitalism is built on these kind of relationships. People get insurance because they don't know what the future holds. The insurance covers them, you know, if they stick with it, covers them when they get sick. Well, under Obamacare, nobody can be turned away, so there's no incentive to go buy insurance. So you don't really go buy insurance. You go up and buy, if you get sick, highly discounted care for what could be ruinously expensive diseases. The Affordable Health Care stole most of the good conservative ideas. Well, I don't know if that's true, but Tom Price is now the most important person in healthcare. He was the House member who was put ahead of it, and bipartisanship is still possible. I mean, it seems like they're going to have some level of bipartisanship to deal with it. All right. Here is a request for some level of evidence from Tucker Carlson, some level of evidence on Russian collusion. Please, something. I'm not going to cover the story anymore because I don't see any evidence out there, but here we go.
We're also investigating leaks as it relates to Russia. Now, you know, as you know, just recently last week I found out that there was additional information that came forward to me that had nothing to do with Russia, but has everything to do with whether or not Americans were masked properly or, in fact, unmasked. And I'm very concerned about
by surveillance.
Now, the Trump-Russia story now exists in three different realities. That was House Intelligence Chairman Devin Nunes on O'Reilly a few minutes ago. He's saying he has seen strong evidence that President Trump was spied upon by the Obama administration, but none that the Trump campaign colluded with the Russian government. Meanwhile, Democratic Congressman Mark Pocan of Wisconsin says he has seen, quote, damning evidence of collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign, but he says journalists will likely publish it in the near future. The rest of us are stuck in a third reality with no proof for either claim. Perhaps Congressman Pocan can change that. He is on the set tonight. Congressman, good to see you.
Yeah, thank you, Tucker. Glad to be here.
So the concern here, I think, on the left and on the right, too, and my concern is that all of this stuff undermines people's faith in a system that is built on faith, essentially. So given that, does it really help to say, for either side, Republicans too, I've seen secret documents I can't tell you about, we're going to wait until it's leaked. Why don't we just all be quiet until the evidence emerges?
Well, or I think what two-thirds of the people in America want, let's have an independent commission come in, it's in the best interest of everyone, and get this resolved so we can move on with things. But the problem is you've got the classified document by 17 intelligence agencies that I've read and reread parts of it. You've got the separate dossier by some British person I don't even refer to, although some of those things have been proven to be true. And then you've got some work that journalists are doing, things like what they had around the attorney general, that he indeed had some contacts during the campaign. And you're right, there's a lot of information out there right now, but that's why it's in everyone's best interest to have an independent commission separate from Congress come in and take a look at all of this, and then we can move on. And that's what the public's really asking for.
But you know what's really going on, which is the NSA, the National Security Agency, has all the data on everything. They've tapped into the trunk lines, every email communication in the United States, every phone call, maybe some of our thoughts are being recorded and stored by the NSA. So they know exactly the degree to which the Russians interfered or didn't, the degree to which the president was spied upon during the campaign or not. Why doesn't the Intel Committee in the House and the Senate say, produce documents now? Now.
Yeah, well,
and the president should say that too.
And it would have worked perfectly that way had, especially on the House side, the head of the Intel Committee not kind of stumbled through this process. And the fact that, you know, just last week he, you know, is getting documents on White House ground.
This is boring. I'm sick of this story. All right, so I do have more stories for you, but let me set one of them up for you. Let's take a break for some local news. And I've got a let me study this story on this lawsuit tonight and come back and report on it for you tomorrow. But I'm starting to get sick to my stomach when I see anything about the wiretapping or especially the Russia story. We'll be right back with a local news. All right, so now, just wondering if I should even bother to play this thing. I could just tell you about it. Democrats still don't understand why Trump won, so they made up an elaborate Russia story. I don't even want to comment on this. It makes me sick. All right, so here is Maxine Waters. We have to impeach President Trump.
His desire is to lead Donald Trump right into impeachment. I'm wondering why is it appropriate to call for the impeachment of the president less than a month after him taking office?
I have not called for the impeachment yet. He's doing it himself. Let me just say that the statement I made was a statement in response to questions and pleas that I'm getting from many citizens across this country. What are we going to do? How can a president who is acting in the manner that he's acting, whether he's talking about the travel ban, the way that he's targeting Muslims, or whether he's talking about his relationship to Putin and the Kremlin, and knowing that they have hacked our DCCC and DNC, and knowing that he is responsible for supplying the bombs that killed innocent children.
Blah, blah, blah. All right, so... Here she is in her crazy glory from L.A., Los Angeles, California. The nutsoid Maxine Waters, she's got a mouth bigger than a blue whale. Check this out.
America has not always been there for us. We've always been there for America. We have fought in America's wars. We have suffered discrimination. We've suffered isolation and undermining. But we stand up for America, oftentimes when others who think they are more patriotic, who say they are more patriotic, do not. When we fight against this president and we point out how dangerous he is for this society and for this country, we're fighting for the democracy. We're fighting for America. We're saying to those who say they're patriotic, but they turned a blind eye to the destruction that he's about to cause this country, you're not nearly as patriotic as we are. We not only have fought in America's wars, have stood up for America, have been there whenever this country was threatened in any way, and we say now that this country is threatened with a president who does not belong there, a president who does not know how this government works, a president who goes down to Mar-a-Lago every weekend and plays golf. He's not huddling with the members of Congress and trying to figure out how to form a consensus, but rather he thought he could come in here and run roughshod over everybody. But that's how he works. That's how he acts. He's not good for America. African Americans know this.
Well, there's Maxine Waters, and now here's Bill O'Reilly's take on Maxine Waters.
Not to be confused with Jesse Waters. Maxine Waters.
I love her.
She says, love her?
Maxine Waters should have her own sitcom.
Absolutely.
Okay? All right? You know, people get angry with Maxine Waters. I want more of it.
Okay, I'm so glad
Let's
you asked.
Go.
Listen.
We have suffered discrimination. We've suffered isolation and undermining, but we stand up for America. Oftentimes when others who think they are more patriotic, who say they are more patriotic, do not. When we fight against this president and we point out how dangerous he is for this society and for this country, we're fighting for the democracy. We're fighting for America. We're saying to those who say they're patriotic, but they turned a blind eye to the destruction that he's about to cause this country, you're not nearly as patriotic as we are.
So what does that mean, Bill? We've been listening all morning. We cannot.
I didn't hear a word she said. I was looking at the James Brown wig.
if we have a picture of James, it's the same one. Right.
No,
and
okay.
He's not using
I got to defend her on that.
You're all wrong.
I have to defend her on that. You can't go after a woman. Plus, I think she's very attractive.
But I didn't say she wasn't attractive. I love James Brown. But it's the same hair James Brown, or the godfather of soul, had.
So he had girl hair.
Whatever it is, I just couldn't get by. All wrong about Maxine Waters. Number one, she's a sincere individual. Whatever she says, she believes. She's not a phony. All right.
That's right.
And that's old school. All right. If you're
speaking
not a phony,
old school, you got this new book.
Right.
Maxine Waters says she refuses to respond. In the meantime, Bill O'Reilly, of course, apologized. 523-1450 and 805-6180. I've got a story about Captain Kangaroo and Howdy Doody coming up that I thought you might find entertaining. 733, and we'll be right back. AM Las Cruces, KOBE. There is something they passed a new bill on something to do with energy and pollution, and I'm trying to find that. Let me find that after the next break. But all right, so Captain Kangaroo. All right, so I got this book and I can't really turn to the cover of it because I'm on last stage manager standing. This is about stage managers. Somebody's experience with stage managers. All right, now here is, and I've got something in my notes here, so this is kind of a 1-2 here. Let's see where I got it. Okay, so, all right, so the guy that's played... The guy that played a Claribel the Clown on Howdy Doody... You know what his name was? Bob Keeshan. You know, there were three of them. So he played the Claribel the Clown. He was the third one, I think. And then he became Captain Kangaroo. All right. So now this is from an article that I found. Well, this is a fine Howdy Do. November 17th, 1987. This is from the Sun Sentinel, which I think is... I think that's out of Florida. Anyway, this is what he says, that you find out what stars are really like backstage. You're really shocked at how rude people were. Or somebody put out a book called "Say Kids, What Time Is It?" A backstage look at the Howdy Doody show, and the guy that's writing this article said he settled back to really enjoy reading the book. Howdy Doody show aired on network television between 47 and 60. 13 years may have been the most important cultural landmark for my generation. That's what the writer's saying. Even now, the names of the characters bring a wonderful feeling to me. Buffalo Bob Smith, Claribel the Clown, Phineas T. Bluster, Chief Thunder Dud, the Flubadub, Inspector John J. Fadoozle, Princess Summerall, Winterspring, and Howdy Doody himself. Shocking revelations. All right, so written by a guy by the name of Stephen Davis, his research was impeccable. Here's some of the things he said. Buffalo Bob Smith hated Claribel. Hate may be too strong, but Buffalo Bob went out of his way to denigrate the clown and depict him to the rest of the staff as a no talent. Buffalo Bob seemed to take some perverse pleasure in humiliating Claribel. Finally, the actor who played Claribel left the show and started a TV program of his own. The actor's name was Bob Keeshan. The show he started, Captain Kangaroo. During rehearsals, the staff of the show would make the puppets and marionettes perform lewd sexual acts with one another. It's probably not that shocking. One of the program's most beloved human actors, the actor named in the book, but it's not mentioned here, would get on the NBC elevators and ask women passengers, sometimes the mothers of children in the peanut gallery, to have sex with him. And Buffalo Bob Smith admits, we were real hucksters, saying, you might say we were real whores. According to Davis, anything that wasn't, Buffalo Bob admits, anything that wasn't nailed down in Dutyville could be sold. And more than 600 Howdy Doody related products were merchandised to America. Now, here's one of the most distressing parts of this, which I kind of found fascinating. Princess Summerall Winter Spring was a lady girl by the name of Judy Tyler, who was a married teenager who got a job dancing in the chorus line of Copacabana at the age of 15. According to the author, she was a foul-mouthed and wildly promiscuous girl. Some of her colleagues on the show told Davis that while out on the road for supermarket openings, she would strip on nightclub tables, and that she slept with everybody, and anybody who wanted to could do so. And Davis, the author, said that when he was 5 years old, Davis, the author, his father held a party for the Howdy Doody staff at their suburban home. So I guess the guy that wrote this book, his dad was a writer for Howdy Doody or a producer. Young Stephen Davis peeked into his parents' bedroom to find Judy Tyler, the same girl, My Princess Summer, Fall, Winter, Spring, his ideal of everything that was good and wholesome, passionately embracing a man whose face I could not see. And so this girl goes on then to star in Jailhouse Rock and dies almost immediately afterwards in a car wreck with her husband. Now, here is the part about Captain Kangaroo that I thought was kind of entertaining. Because, you know, all these kid shows, you have to be benign and upbeat and friendly and everything. Life on Captain Kangaroo's show was fraught on a good day. Bob Keeshan, the captain, frequently, and this is from this other book, Last Stage Manager Standing. Bob Keeshan, the captain, frequently would get ticked off and would leave the set for the rest of the day. That meant an added overtime tape day. Great for the crew, but upsetting to the many members of management. Bob was very temperamental. The slightest thing would set him off, and did. The best indication that the day was over, even though we may have only completed a half hour's worth of work, was when Bob would rip off his wig and pout back to his dressing room. And there's a lot of other little anecdotes, but I thought you might find that interesting. Behind the scenes, we'll take a break, 7:42, and we'll actually... see here. Speaking of entertainment, here's something from Jim Gaffigan on Wales. And this is from his.
I've been trying to swim a lot, you know. You always hear swimming's the best exercise, but have you seen how fat whales are? Whales, they're like swimming all the time. Not working, whales. Not working. Whales always kind of sound depressed, don't they? Rejected by eHarmony. My Facebook friends forgot my birthday. Why am I so bad at hide and seek? Fish always find me. Wouldn't it be great if we found out whales were in complete denial about how huge they are? It's mostly water weight. A lot of water weight. Once after a show, someone came up to me and they're like, you know, whales aren't fat. They have a layer of blubber. I thought calling myself Big Bone was a cop-out. Blubber? That's like the opposite of muscle. It goes like muscular, toned, flabby, and then like a mile away is blubber. Fat made a noise, would be blubber.
Damn you, Plankton, you don't even taste good.
Plankton, that can't be that high in calories. That's got to be frustrating for some whales. All they eat is plankton.
I only eat plankton.
you know, the fish are like, and cupcakes.
Just plankton sprinkled on pizza. It's mostly water weight.
I do love whales. I don't want you to get the wrong idea. But it's not like there are people that are anti-whale anyway. You know, it's like, oh, don't bring up whales around my dad. He'll go off.
Damn whales are all fat and lazy. Living off the government. Taking our jobs. Blah, 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 blah. Blah, blah, blah. Blah, 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 blah.
Whales must have poor body image. Can you imagine having a part of your body called a blowhole? And it's on top of your head? You think when whales get older, they have less control over their blowhole? They're just in the middle of a normal conversation. What do you say? You and I grab some plankton. Excuse me. This is so embarrassing. I was just in the Indian Ocean and my stomach really can't handle that. The old whale geography diarrhea joke. Coming in handy. You always hear number one killer of whales, mankind. You know, as if there's tons of competition. Let's take a look at the leaderboard of whale killers. Still number one, mankind. Number two, the pelican with the machine gun. And a distant third, the lion on a jet ski. Back to you, Bill.
All right, so speaking of whales, Kim Jong-un is the leader of North Korea, and he's very upset at being called fat by people in the United States. And he's now threatening that if we don't knock it off, well, it was John McCain causing even more trouble, the old war hero. Kim Jong-un was called by the top senator, John McCain, this is from the UK Sun, a crazy fat kid. And Kim Jong-un is not going to be taking this sitting down, even though he's got a pic. There's a picture of him inspecting a food factory, and he just looks overwhelmed. They're walking by conveyor belts full of Twist donuts. You can't see a human being happier than this. And so he is, but anyway, he's saying the gloves are off, no more Mr. Nice Guy. And if you don't knock it off, 90% of your people, if you don't stop calling me fatso and a fat crazy kid, 90% of your people could die. 747, fly in the friendly skies, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450, and 805-6180-2 text. Your crazy rants to me. We'll be back. All right, so I do have a clip of, I thought that Donald Trump was a dangerous person, but obviously John McCain could start World War III. Check it out.
China is the one that can, the only one that can control Kim Jong-un, this crazy fat kid that's running North Korea. And they're the ones. They could stop North Korea's economy in a week.
But they haven't. So why?
They haven't.
So what? How do you
because
get China
Chinese,
to do it?
The Chinese have to understand there's a penalty going to be paid, imposed by us, if they don't rein in an individual that could literally start a world war. And more importantly, perhaps in the short term, strike the United States of America. He's not rational, Greta. We're not dealing with even with someone like Joseph Stalin, who had a certain rationality to his barbarity. So this is incredibly serious. But the first place I'd go is China and say, look, you can shut down their economy. And so rein them in. It's in your interest to do so. And if the Chinese refuse to do that, we have to consider all options, and it isn't necessarily a world war. But Mr. Kim Jong-un has got to understand that there would be a huge penalty to pay if he even tried it.
Crazy fat kid. All right, here's a little clip from, I was trying to cue it up, but Paul Joseph Watson, who's kind of an assistant to Alex Jones, and he talks about Islam.
Yeah, aftermath of the debates, the CNN ORC poll.
It's got to be queued up a little bit more, but I didn't have enough time on the break. But he's talking about Islam, and I thought it was interesting.
37% approval rating for Trump, according to this guy.
He was talking about...
Who are they sampling? Who are they asking?
All right, so what he was talking about in the beginning of this clip was that 50% of voters say that future voters will support Trump. So Trump's not doing as bad as the 36% number in the other group would lead you to believe.
Well, I asked them, and they have completely failed to provide.
And then when he contacted Gallup for the substance where they got their numbers from, they never contacted him back.
An answer more than 24 hours later. Unacceptable, which of course suggests that they're hiding something. They don't even put it on their website. How simple would it be to say this poll?
All right, so we're talking about, and it is a huge deal, the falsification of polling data, because it's one more thing. It's what we talked about the other day. There was a failure of social sciences to be able to prove their own studies, and so a lot of the studies that are cited by groups that are trying to make society more progressive or to not resist a progressive programming, ideas are based on falsified science. Same idea.
Suspicious. If this is a fair poll.
And oversampling is one way that they can do it. It's by getting a group of people that would say, for example, would be more Democrat than they would be Republican.
Top story up on Infowars.com. I posted this about an hour ago. Study. One third of young Muslims in France think terrorism is acceptable. Oh, religion of peace strikes again. So basically, they had this big study conducted immediately after the Paris attacks in 2015, November 13 attacks. They asked almost 7,000 high school students in France, 25% of whom were Muslims, they asked them a bunch of different questions. And what did they discover? They discovered, and bearing in mind this study has been received very badly by the French media because it's, quote, not politically correct. It literally says that in one of the articles, that we have to be very careful about the results of this study because the facts are not politically correct. Well, the facts are the facts are the facts, and these are the facts. According to this study, a young Muslim is four times more likely to adhere to radical beliefs than a Christian. 33% of Muslim students in this poll consider it acceptable, that's a quote, acceptable to, quote, participate in violent actions for ideas, which is obviously terrorism. Violence in pursuit of political goals is terrorism. That's the very definition of terrorism.
All right. My question for you, as we bring these people into the country, and obviously Trump has kind of turned the tables on this, but here's the issue. Most Americans believe that it's important to be supportive of immigration, and we're a country originally of immigrants. But what are we going to do about getting serious? Since the Obama administration made a fetish of bringing in people from even jihad zones and pretending that it didn't matter whether they were background checked or whatever. What are we going to do if we're going to continue to bring people in from the Middle East, if that's our decision as a nation, which I'm sure that it will be? How are we going to upgrade our ability? So that's part of the travel ban. But I mean, here's what I was thinking when I was listening to, I was getting ready for this segment on Sweden. You're bringing people into the West massive amounts of people that have no exposure to feminism. They have no exposure to women's rights, the idea of human rights. They have no exposure to the idea of the religion of peace, or they have not lived in a multicultural society where people are allowed to have their own religious views and not be attacked for it. You're bringing these people in, and here's the problem with people like Angela Merkel, a leader of Germany. She thinks because she's a good person, and therefore the country she leads is a good person, if she decides to bring somebody in from, say, Syria, that person is going to be so grateful, and they're going to try to fit in, and they're just going to kind of, just by being in contact with these Germans, they're going to morph into being an updated Westerner, and they're not. They don't believe in women's rights in Islam. Women's rights don't exist. And I've got plenty of books to prove the fact that they don't exist. So if you're going to bring these people in, how are you going to enculturate them? If you don't enculturate them, it's too dangerous to have them in the country, because they haven't been in, and a lot of them haven't been in mixed gender situations. Men and women don't mix in the Middle East like they do here. And so how are you going to, and this is one of the main questions, how are you going, if you claim to care about women, which is one of the great themes of the modern age, how are you going to protect women in particular from Islam in countries where Islam has been the number one influence, where no other religion is really allowed to express itself, and where there is no constitutionalism, there's no Bill of Rights, there's no doctrine of feminism, and where even rapes are really not prosecuted because of the strange rules that are laid down in Sharia law. I'll leave that for you to think about. Thanks for tuning in, Kelly O'Connell. Had a great time hanging out with you. 523-1454 tomorrow. And I'll get to today's text tomorrow. Sorry about that. But have a good one, and we'll meet back in 22 hours on KOBE. Ciao.